Today's episode is sponsored by Freetrade, the commission-free investment platform that is revolutionising the world of investing in the UK market. Welcome to Many Happy Returns, where we aim to make you a better investor. I'm Roman.
And I'm Michael.
ESG funds lured investors with a promise of saving the planet while getting higher returns along the way. But after years of inflows, investors have begun to pull their money.
I want to know whether ESG is beyond redemption and if there's a better way to approach sustainable investment. And in today's dumb question of the week, why are there multiple oil prices? All right, let's get into it. So we actually did an episode on ESG right when we started. I think it was our fifth episode, and that was in early 2022 and was just when the ESG backlash was beginning, just starting to bubble up. It's fair to say since then, it's really come to a crescendo, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult, I think, for a fund manager to launch a new ESG fund at the moment, if not impossible.
I mean, it's not just that they're avoiding launching new funds, it's that they're shutting down lots of ESG funds. So the Wall Street Journal reported that 32 sustainable funds closed last year and six just dropped the ESG badge from the fund.
Yeah, with all these ideas, you've really got to see whether it becomes popular. And in this case, it's pretty much had a huge backlash. Now, to be fair, I think there's a certain type of person who's pushed back more than another type of person. But overall, you can see why the star of ESG is no longer in its ascendancy.
I mean, the kind of person that pushing back, were you thinking it's someone with a red hat in America?
For example, but I do still speak to people who say, I'm interested in buying an ESG version of this fund. So I don't think it's true to say that everyone is no longer interested in it. I just think that people are going to be more selective about the types of fund they go for.
Yeah, if you look at the flows, ESG kind of peaked at the end of 2021, where every quarter it was getting massive inflows into these sustainable funds. But then since then, it flipped and we've started to see outflows, I think, every quarter. And investors in America withdrew more than $14 billion last year from ESG funds. And part of me wonders, yeah, is it because of this political backlash against the idea? Or is it because ESG funds had a terrible 2022 with their tech overweight and energy underweight? Because it seems to have correlated with the bad performance. So maybe it's not just the political backlash here.
Yeah, it's not just about headlines about being woke. I think it's to do with the outflows from tech, because I think one of the things we pointed out previously was that if you go for ESG, it tends to tilt you more towards tech stocks. So what was a highly concentrated tech play, if you buy global stocks, becomes even more concentrated. And of course, in 2022, as you say, the returns were pretty awful during the tech wreck.
Because that was the weird promise of ESG over the last 10 years, is its advocates were saying, you can have your cake and eat it, right? You can be environmentally conscious and socially conscious and targeting companies with good governance while also outperforming the broad stock market. It was these two promises, like you can be good and make money.
Which I always thought was questionable, because what it's going to create is a tilt away from energy towards tech. And in certain environments, that will do well, but not in all environments. And we saw in 2022 an environment where it went badly, badly wrong.
If you look back at these ESG funds since their inception, or at least over the last 10 years, they haven't outperformed. They had a period of outperformance, but over the whole period, they've actually underperformed slightly.
The research was done by a company called Scientific Beta, and they looked at US ETFs, and they looked at Bloomberg's categorization as socially responsible or ESG. And what they found was the average annual returns over the period from 2012 to the end of 2022, ESG ETFs were 0.2 percentage points lower in return than comparable non-ESG ETFs. So does the question of their higher return hold up? And the answer seems to be no.
And what was interesting is that, yes, that was the headline underperformance. But then they also looked when you adjust for the factor tilts and the sector tilts. And they found that once you adjust for those, the underperformance gap actually worsens to around 0.7 percentage points.
Because presumably what they would have done then is to look at tech stocks which had higher ESG scores versus other tech stocks with lower ESG scores. And tech was the big success story, of course.
Exactly. I mean, maybe you could say, oh, that's a small underperformance, really. But over a long period, that would compound. And the prime driver of it seems to be the difference in fees. So the expense ratio for ESG ETFs averages around 20 basis points, so 0.2%, whereas comparable non-ESG funds, it's half as expensive, so just 10 basis points.
So if you were being cynical, you could say this is just another attempt to rebrand what is beta, just market tracking, into a more expensive form of beta by adding a few whistles and bells. That would be my cynical take on it.
I mean, there was a nice article from Aswath Damodaran who kind of sums that up with some banging quotes. The one I liked was, ESG is born in sanctimony, nurtured with hypocrisy, and sold with sophistry. It's a great quote.
It's harsh, isn't it? I was surprised how anti he was.
Oh, he really hates it, doesn't he? But he thinks it is that cynical. He thinks it was a way to have this kind of wishy-washy definition of what's a good company and what's a socially irresponsible company without kind of a hard classification. And then, yeah, use it to jack up fees.
Oh, this is a great quote. Like pyromaniacs complaining about the fires around them, ESG advocates who choose to be arbiters of social good in a world divided on many issues protest that ESG has been politicized.
I mean, that is a fair point, really, isn't it? These ESG scores, which indices use to compile them, so they give every company a score and say, this one is socially good, this one is medium, this one is bad, and then the index gets weighted on that basis. They are not really objective, are they? Because how do you know which companies are good? Like, you could maybe say generally oil companies are less good maybe than battery companies. I don't know, but that doesn't seem to be how these scores really work. It's done on a self-reported basis often. And when you look at it, you can find it surprising. Like, companies like Tesla sometimes don't make an ESG index because of the way it treats its workers, whereas a company like Shell sometimes does.
But let's for a moment imagine that there was some kind of objective truth about what constitutes an ESG company. What you'd expect is if you ask two different companies to rate the same stock, they'd come up with the same answer. And in aggregate, if you looked at those statistics, you look at the correlation of the rankings. And there's a paper by ESMA, the European Securities and Markets Authority, where they find a level of correlation of 60%. So not particularly high.
So that's saying that there's a big difference between different ESG indices, like the companies in them aren't the same.
Yeah. Whereas if it was objectively apparent whether a company was ESG or not, then you'd expect a much higher correlation. And by comparison, if you compare that with credit ratings, you know, AAA, BB, whatever, that's 99% correlated across the big rating agencies like Moody's, S&P and Fitch.
So that suggests that is more objective. That's looking at hard data and saying, yeah, this is the truth.
Yeah, this company has this probability of default in the next X years. Yeah. So I think the subjectivity is a problem. And I think ultimately, another issue I've always had about it is that not everyone's ethics are the same. I personally like nuclear power. Maybe it's because I'm a physicist by background. Other people think that nuclear power shouldn't be included.
Germans.
Yeah.
They closed down all their nuclear power stations at the worst time. What are you doing?
No. Yeah, I was shocked when they did it. And I thought it would be a mistake, and how right I was.
I mean, the other point people make about ESG, while we're getting all our cynical takes out of the way here, is that it was often a cover for greenwashing, both on the part of companies, you know, ticking the box saying we're doing these environmental initiatives, which maybe don't make that much difference, but also on the part of the asset managers and the investment banks selling these ESG products to investors, where maybe, yes, they said, we're going to be digging into all these companies in depth and finding the ones that are acting as good corporate citizens. But really, they were just throwing together an index and it was, you know, maybe not that carefully constructed.
So shall I tell you how I first came across this idea of ESG and how it impacted me?
Yeah.
You may or may not know, I'm a big tea drinker. So when I was working at the investment bank, it would just be cup after cup after cup. And of course, They have disposable cups. So suddenly I noticed that there were all these initiatives to try and reduce the number of cups we were using, and the cups that they used were very different and fell apart. So I thought, oh, this is ESG. And that's when I first became aware of it, when I had to drink tea out of these flimsy cups.
But do you think the bank deserved a lower cost of capital for those flimsy cups?
Obviously, yeah.
I mean, I think regulators are now being more strict on the kind of greenwashing idea. So I know that the SEC last year came down harshly on Deutsche Bank, alleging that they constructed their indices in a way which wasn't consistent with their marketing material around ESG. They actually settled for $19 million. And I can quote the deputy director of the SEC's Division of Enforcement and head of Climate Change and ESG Task Force. Get a shorter title, please. Sanjay Wadhwa. But they say, whether advertising how they incorporate ESG factors into investment recommendations or making any other representation that is material to investors, investment advisors must ensure that their actions conform to their words. Here, Deutsche Bank advertised that ESG was in its DNA. But as the SEC's order finds, its investment professionals failed to follow the ESG investment processes that it marketed. And I don't think Deutsche Bank's alone in this. Everyone jumped on this bandwagon.
I just hate that when companies say this is in our DNA. You just think, oh, that's so cheesy. It should have been red flagged just for that.
Maybe they were. I mean, Deutsche Bank needs to find some way of attracting capital.
Ooh.
I don't know why I'm being so harsh on the Germans today. just the way it's going.
But I saw that even things like government bonds have come out with green versions. The UK Debt Management Office has green bonds. So it's expanded not just from equity capital, but also into even things like sovereign debt. For the same reason, I suspect, which is that if you can sell the debt and make it more attractive, then it's just a marketing ploy. That would be my cynical take on it again.
I mean, it's easy to be cynical about this stuff because, to be fair, a lot of it is nonsense. But saying that, like, my view is that climate change is a big deal. One of the biggest things facing the world that we're going to need to deal with. Our kids are going to need to deal with it. And it would be good if capital markets reflected that. And even just in a cold, hard capitalist numbers point of view, climate change is a risk, right? It's a material risk to the earnings of lots of companies. Obviously, things like oil companies are going to have to adapt to the net zero world. But every country, right? If it's selling into countries which are going to be experiencing more natural disasters, like, climate change is a huge risk. What I think was a mistake was this bundling of ESG, environmental, social and governance. Like, they're very separate concerns. And like you say, not everyone's ethics are going to be the same. But I wonder if there should have been a green tilted index and then various socially responsible indices, depending on your politics. And then governance, I kind of think, well, all companies should be working in the interest of their shareholders. This governance idea kind of should be implicit, right? When you're listing on a public exchange.
But just imagine if there was like a non-arsehole index where you just couldn't invest in a company that hired arseholes. I mean, it wouldn't even exist in the financial sector, which is replete with them.
I don't think any sector is going to be arsehole free.
It's like a universal law. If you work in a team of 10 people, there's always one.
It's like when you get these indices which are like World X USA, you want World X arsehole.
Today's episode is sponsored by Freetrade, the commission-free investment platform that is revolutionising the world of investing in the UK market. Freetrade offers you over 6,100 US, UK and European stocks, ETFs and investment trusts. With over 1.5 million users on board and having won the best online trading platform at the British Bank Awards 5 years in a row, they're a well-trusted trading platform. With Freetrade, investors have the opportunity to manage their investments in a tax-efficient way by opening a stocks and shares ISA. For those looking to consolidate their retirement savings, Freetrade offers a self-invested personal pension, or SIP, so you can bring all your old pensions under one roof. And speaking of ISA and SIP, Freetrade has a limited-time offer giving away a free share worth between £100 and £2,100 when you open and top up, or transfer an ISA or SIP with at least £10,000 before 5th of April 2024. Curious how it works? Here's what you need to do. Download the free trade app, open either an ISA or SIP account with an annual standard or plus subscription on or before 5th of April 2024. Top up your account or start a transfer for at least £10,000. Keep your account open with a balance of £10,000 or more and will drop the free share into your account within 90 days of campaign completion. Head over to freetrade.io/transfer to learn more and get started. Remember, this offer closes on the 5th of April 2024. Capital at risk, ISA and SIP eligibility, tax rules and terms and conditions apply. Free share value varies depending on the amount topped up or transferred. Annual subscription required. Other charges may apply. Yeah, I think the bundling idea is a good one. The problem is that you're always going to have pushback. And if you have three different categories, you're just going to have three times the pushback. Whereas if you frame the question differently, I think that would have been easier to market and more acceptable to more people.
The thing is, the marketing did a great job for quite a long time. I think ESG was really a concept innovated in 2004, I believe. A paper from the World Bank and the IMF was kind of the genesis of it. And it gathered a lot of funds quite quickly. But then, yeah, performance waned and politics kind of stuck the boot in. And it's interesting how the language here really matters, particularly in America. It seems that when you ask people in a neutral way whether they want companies to have a positive impact, the vast majority of Americans say yes. 88% say they want companies to have a positive impact on communities. And 77%, in fact, even approve of companies speaking out on social issues that matter to their employees and customers. However, when you mention the term ESG, people are a lot less open to that.
It's the phrase, isn't it? Social and political issues.
So these figures come from Global Strategy Group, who did a study on the use of language here. And when you just ask neutrally about companies that speak out on social issues, 75% of Democrats approve and 59% of Republicans approve. When you mention ESG, so the same thing, but just with those letters in it, the approval from Democrats actually goes up to 82% and the approval from Republicans plummets to 34%.
So really it's a branding issue rather than having ethical funds per se. And companies are always aware of these things. For example, everyone's now saying AI. And if you look in the earnings calls about mentions of ESG, there were only 9 direct mentions of ESG in the hundreds of earnings calls in recent weeks. And that's according to FactSet.
And that compares to over 150 mentions by S&P 500 companies at the peak in the fourth quarter of 2021. So clearly they've thought, the people don't like ESG, let's stop mentioning ESG. But interestingly, they are using other terms when they talk about the exact same stuff. So they're saying things like sustainable investing, green economy, responsible business, transition investing. So because companies clearly still care about this stuff because, well, one, it matters, but also there are people still wanting to allocate based on these sustainable criteria.
So it hasn't been edited out of their DNA then?
No CRISPR for ESG.
And Vanguard actually withdrew from the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative, and they did that at the end of 2022.
I think these big asset managers, Vanguard, BlackRock, they just sort of want to avoid getting swept up in the ESG issue, right? Like, my sense is they don't really care about ESG. They launched a load of ESG funds because that's where the money was for a while, but they don't want to be part of the political backlash around it. I know Larry Fink at BlackRock says he's stopped using the term ESG because it's been weaponized by the far left and the far right, according to him.
But it's still going to talk to companies about decarbonization, corporate governance and social issues. So it's not that it's stopped advocating for these causes. It's just that it's not going to brand it as ESG anymore.
I mean, there's a bigger question here. Like, forget all the politics and the divisiveness around ESG. And even forget the returns. Does ESG investing actually work to allocate capital to good companies and responsible companies and make it more expensive for polluting companies, for example, to do business? Does it actually work in the way that environmentalists hope?
Well, there is one paper which empirically addressed this question, and it's by Burke and Binsbergen, and it's called The Impact of Impact Investing, which is a good title. And they summarize it using just a few numbers, which I think is a good way of looking at it. The three parameters they look at are the fraction of socially conscious capital, the fraction of targeted firms in the economy, and the return correlation between targeted firms and the rest of the stock market.
Yeah, so they're looking at divestment, like people withholding their capital from oil companies and weapons manufacturers and whatever else. And does that really make it more expensive for those companies to do business?
And they make the point, which I've talked about in the past but didn't have any data to back it up, which is that given the current levels of socially conscious capital, our conclusion is that using primary markets, so this is when you issue new shares or new bonds, would be a more effective strategy to affect social change.
So in terms of the secondary market, I think they found that divestment and ESG actually makes very little difference. One way they looked at it was studying what happened when a company changed ESG classification, like either they became a good company or suddenly became a bad company. And they were unable to detect an impact of ESG strategies on the cost of capital of these firms.
But the other conclusion they made, which I think is also just spot on, is that our results suggest that to have impact, instead of divesting, i.e. selling your stocks, or not buying them in the first place, socially conscious investors should invest and exercise their rights of control to change corporate policy. In other words, you don't like what they're doing, buy their stock and vote at their shareholders' meeting, which I think makes a lot of sense. That's the whole point of the rights of shareholders.
I mean, are there ways for investors who want to be socially conscious doing exactly that? Like if we're saying ESG funds are maybe not the best way to try and influence corporate policy, how should we go about it then if we want to do this?
Well, I think one point is that instead of doing it via capital markets, trying to affect a change in corporate behaviour, then you can always boycott their products. That's another way to affect them negatively.
I mean, I have some issue with the suggestion that we can do too much with our consumption habits. Yes, we can take less flights and things like that. But when it comes to arms manufacturers, it's not really me buying the missiles and the tanks. And when it comes to oil, a lot of that usage is kind of disguised in the economy, like it's implicit in all the products we're buying. So other than just lowering your overall level of consumption, it seems hard to sort of pick and choose, other than going for companies which are somehow badged as, I don't know, using clean energy or whatever. But then you're back to the problem of ESG scores and judging it fairly.
I just think, though, that ultimately, if there's demand for these products, somebody's going to provide them. Whether that's Shell or BP makes no difference.
That's true. Like oil companies is a great example. There was a pushback, even in primary markets, and kind of a shunning from investors to some extent. But then private companies came in and drilled the oil fields and the oil was pulled out of the ground. Like the oil is still being used.
Now, another way of approaching this is instead of crossing names out of a global index, which don't meet certain ESG criteria, is you actively invest a highly concentrated portfolio in stocks that are focused on a particular goal. Now, they often use the Sustainable Development Goals, which were published by the United Nations. So these are called impact funds, and you might go for a fund which is specifically keyed into reducing CO2 emissions. So they would invest in things like wind energy, solar energy, and their goal would be to reduce CO2 emissions by a certain amount every year.
I think if what you really care about is making a difference environmentally or socially or whatever, then impact investing is the way to go about it. But I think you should go in with your eyes open that if these projects, these companies were really, really good investments, people would be doing it anyway, right? So to me, it lies somewhere between investment and charity. Like you should go in expecting, well, definitely not to match market returns and potentially even to lose money on these funds. Like, I mean, any investment can lose money, but these seem way more risky because of concentration risk and also because these companies are not solely focused on maximizing profits for shareholders.
Yeah, I think that's true. If you're going to be investing purely for profit, then ESG, if anything, is going to be a drag on those returns by restricting the universe of stocks in which you can invest.
I mean, I guess my point more broadly is that we shouldn't expect to be able to have our cake and eat it. this promise at the start of the ESG movement that we could make a difference and we could match or exceed the returns of global markets is just not the case. Like, to me, those things seem just in opposition to each other by definition.
Also, by looking at things which are in a state of transition, there's a huge risk there because you don't know which technology is going to be dominant. Is it going to be wind power? Is it going to be solar, nuclear, or something that we simply haven't considered yet? And if you back the wrong horse, then you could end up with a dud. So by looking forward to tomorrow's technology, that's always the gamble.
Yeah, because clearly money is going to flow into the transition economy, like moving from fossil fuels to greener energy sources. It's going to attract a huge amount of capital, some from government, some from private investors. And we're going to need these products. But even if you're looking at it just from a investment return perspective, how you go about doing that is tough.
But this is one example where I think investing in single stocks is going to be a much more effective way of doing it. Firstly, because of the flexibility, you've got much more ability to tailor it to your particular beliefs. However, you have to spend a lot longer researching each company to ensure that it's what you think it is. Because often they say things, but then they don't do those things. And that makes it difficult for investors, the transparency issue. So if anything, I think better reporting by companies on their actual behavior would be much more useful than trying to create these one-size-fits-all indices or funds.
Oh, definitely. If you look at how an ESG score is actually put together, it's hundreds and hundreds of different criteria and judgments that are all meshed together into one number. And again, Damodaran sums it up. He says, the truth is that ESG scores today measure everything. Consequently, they measure nothing.
So whether you think ESG investing is woke and something that should be avoided, or whether you want to invest using ESG principles, why not join our community and discuss it with other investors? To learn more about that, just go to our website, pensioncraft.com.
Okay, today's dumb question of the week is, why are there multiple oil prices? We've discussed oil before and how important the oil price is for global markets and the global economy. But what even is the oil price? You hear so many different numbers banded around.
Well, ultimately, this is a commodity, and these are usually traded in the futures market. And when you have a futures contract, you have to specify everything about the oil that's delivered, where it's delivered, the quality of oil, and when it's delivered. And immediately that tells you that there are going to be different contracts. The delivery point is going to be different, whether it's a US, UK, elsewhere, and the quality of the oil varies quite a bit as well.
I want good quality oil. Who's going for the bad quality oil?
Well, it has different uses, because if you want to pave a road, say, with tarmac, then that requires a lower quality of oil. There's still demand for it, but you don't have to use the light fractions of oil for that.
So the two benchmarks I hear most quoted are Brent crude and West Texas Intermediate, WTI. What's the difference between these two things then?
So WTI is a US price, and the delivery point there is Cushing in Oklahoma. Also, the quality of the oil there is very light and sweet, and that makes it perfect for refining into gasoline. Whereas if you look at Brent crude, that's for delivery in the UK. So that would be for North Sea oil, for example.
And I believe Brent crude actually accounts for around 2/3 of oil crude contracts around the world and is the most widely used of these benchmarks.
Yeah, despite a lot of oil not being produced in those fields, but it actually refers to oil from four different fields from the North Sea: Brent, Forties, Oseberg, and Ekofisk.
But do these different benchmarks broadly track each other? Like, is the oil price, however you measure it, moving up and down at the same time?
Yeah, usually. I mean, they're highly correlated, but there will be divergences. You know, sometimes production in one region will be affected, which will push up its price relative to the others. But look, the reason why oil is important is that it affects the global economy probably more than any other commodity price, because it's an input to so many processes. Chemical processes, producing things like plastics, energy to fuel our economy, driving your car in many cases, energy generation, electricity generation. So really, that's an input to so many different processes and activities that it's a very, very, very important number.
And these futures contracts are a way of standardizing what I guess are prices that fluctuate all the time, depending on the supply and demand of oil.
Yeah, the other dimension, of course, is the shape of the curve. So sometimes if you look at the futures curve, you'll get spot prices, those are delivered today, which are higher or lower than the ones delivered in the future. So this is contango or backwardation. And this just reflects supply and demand issues in the particular market you're interested in.
Did you ever write a strategy paper called To Contango? Because you should have done.
Yeah, clearly. So if you do want to get oil exposure, if you think oil prices are going to go up for whatever reason, then it's not as easy as you think, because if the curve is upward sloping, then it'd always be selling the short-term contract and buying the long-term contract, and that negative roll cost is going to affect you negatively. So just make sure you understand the impact of the shape of the futures curve and preferably choose a fund which is going to reduce that roll cost. And as always, if you don't understand it, don't buy it.
Just don't buy it. Don't buy oil. You don't need it. There's no risk premium. Thank you for joining us for Many Happy Returns. Do send us your questions, no matter how dumb, at the email address mhr@pensioncraft.com.
And do remember to check out pensioncraft.com for all the information about our membership and investment coaching options.
Many Happy Returns is a PensionCraft production, co-hosted and executive produced by Romy Nakiza and Michael Pugh. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes and is not financial advice. We do not provide recommendations or endorse any decision to buy, sell, or hold any security. We cannot be held responsible for any actions listeners may take, and investors are encouraged to seek independent financial advice.